You have to remember that obviously only the audio makes it into the podcast, but this Zoom meeting is being recorded, video and all.
Yeah, for purely for blackmail purposes.
I would like to get
Exactly.
my MRC GP first. So if we could just put that to one side. Everybody, and we want to welcome you all back to a brand new 2023 episode to Somewhere in Between, the RCGP Early Careers podcast for AIT and First Fives. My name's Mira. I'm the host of this podcast. You may not have heard from us in a little while, but we've been regrouping, thinking of some excellent episodes for all of you out there. And today I am joined with two Somewhere in Between staunch co-hosts that have been there with me all through this journey. So, hello, Johannes.
Hey, how's it going?
Great, thank you. And with Johannes, I have LJ as well. Hey, LJ.
Hi, Mira.
And Kim and Hatim couldn't be with us today. Now, if you're new to the podcast, there is a group of five of us that try and put out episodes somewhat regularly, as to the best of our abilities. But we are definitely looking for new contributors and hosts and everything else. But we'll come to that at the end of the podcast. And it would be very remiss of me if I didn't also mention the silent stronghold, the force behind the podcast, which is producer Bryn. Now, you won't hear him in this episode. I'm sure I wouldn't be able to coax him out. But if you do listen to some previous episodes, you will hear his voice in an intro. So you can imagine he's tinkering away, making us all sound a lot better than we are. Anyway, onto the podcast. So this episode, we thought we would actually, well, it's that time of year again. Some new AITs have started in August. ST1s have become ST2s, ST2s have become ST3s. I could go on and on and on. But we thought it would be a really good episode to just kind of sit and talk about our experiences, what it's been like to be AITs for all of us. We're all at slightly different stages of our training and in our first five careers. And maybe any top tips and tricks, and that's quite hard to say, of what we've kind of found our journey to be. So sit back, relax, and enjoy this episode. So, actually, I probably should also say, Johannes, LJ, and I haven't been in a Zoom podcast room for a really long time. So, how are you guys doing? LJ, how are you?
I'm good. I'm pleased to say I'm back in GP land for my rotations for the remainder of my training. Listeners may not know, new listeners, I am currently an ST2. I have been an ST2 for the past year. I will be an ST2 for a little while longer until summertime, hopefully ARCP permitting. And I'm less than full time. I do an academic job on the side as well. So it's an interesting journey, but I'm very pleased to be back in general practice. And I think you can't see me, but you can hear me. I'm overjoyed at the prospects of not being in a hospital anymore.
Well, I'm sure GP Land is thrilled to have you back, LJ. You've come over to the light side. We're allowed to be biased about that, aren't we? I think a little bit. And moving on to Johannes, congratulations, recent CCT over here. Tell us a little bit about what you're up to now, Johannes.
So I guess that makes me on the dark side then, because I've CCT'd a few weeks ago, and 2 days later I was working in an urgent care centre in a hospital, and I love it. It's great. I never had anything against like normal general practice, but I've always kind of bounced between. I always need a balance, and I like change. So for me, I've really enjoyed being back in hospital and doing my own bloods, doing a few basic procedures, seeing things. Where the patients are really, really grateful to be seeing a GP because, their usual GP won't see them for a month or whatever, and they love to have a little grumble about that, but they're really grateful to see you. So I think it's just been quite a fulfilling role to be in. It's been a nice change of scene, nice to meet new people, really well supported. So it's given me exactly what I needed, but it's just been ad hoc locum, so it's not a long-term thing, and I'm looking forward to starting my 10 session job next week, which is going to be a whole other experience.
I mean, absolutely. You obviously, listeners can't see us both, LJ and I, doing the sort of mind-blown hand gestures here. As you'll all know, 10 sessions is a whole lot, but we can definitely check in with Johannes at another stage to see how that's all going. I'm sure he'll have lots to tell us about.
Or you'll write me a really nice obituary anyway. I feel like 10 sessions is almost a swear word in general practice, isn't it?
I mean, it very well can be. And I suppose it's a really nice kind of full circle to how varied a role in general practice can be. I've said this a million times in millions of podcasts before, but if you're listening to this for the first time, it doesn't really matter. It's basically how GP is a gift, in the sense that whilst you're going through training, there are obviously obstacles and hoops that you must jump through. There are the exams, which we will touch on, portfolio again, which we can definitely talk about. But it is also a journey along the way where you're accumulating a lot of different skills. And it gives you a space to sort of understand who you are as a clinician, what you might like to be doing, and kind of the world is your oyster, as we all know from Johannes telling us about his post-CCT experience. Personally, talking about myself, I CCT'd in November last year. I've been locuming since then, really enjoying it in Southeast London, and actually considering taking a salaried job kind of in the near future. So that job has also been really, really nice. But this episode is not about post-CCT life. We will come to that another time. It is about being an AIT. So what better way than me to direct straight to LJ, who is our resident AIT in this call, and just sort of, LJ, your thoughts on, you know, this stage of training, the journey, kind of how GP, what GP means to you, and sort of your musings on that.
So I think the first thing to think about if you are an ST1 listening is welcome. It's a general practice. Welcome to the RCGP. It's very exciting. It's very nice. I think this will be interesting as it's probably the first time you're going to get quite so much support. I think that regardless of where you are in the country, so I'm a trainee in Oxford. You guys have all been training in London. When you did train, we're training in London. I've heard from people across South Wales, especially, and in Scotland. But it doesn't really matter where you are in the country. You get a lot of protected time, especially as a GP trainee in general practice. And I think that that comes as a bit of a shock to lots of people. When you're a GP trainee in a hospital job, just, you know, you still have protected time to go to your teaching. It's a really lovely community. VTSs don't tend to be too big. It's a bit like a small class. If you were to go back to sort of school sort of times, there's probably usually about 20 to 30 of you, and you get to know everybody. And it's just really nice sense of community. And I think just, you know, it's okay. Just, you know, relax. You're doing a fantastic job of being a doctor, but you're also a trainee. And I think general practice specialty training really does, like, do what it says on the tin. It's training. You're learning. You're being taught. You're being protected. So I think first bit of advice is to lean into that. Don't be scared. It's not going to get taken away from you. It's okay. And yeah, just really enjoy it. 3 years is, if you're doing full time training, 3 years isn't very long. The cohort that I joined with are going into ST3. And they're all sort of looking at the next 12 months thinking, oh, goodness me, what's happening? This has all happened so quickly. I'm quite lucky. I still get a little while because of my less than full-time training. But yeah, enjoy it. It's fun. And yeah, I don't know. I obviously don't know how it feels to CCT and not no longer be in a VTS. But I wonder what you guys think. Did you miss the VTS? Did you miss your cohort, your group from training?
I mean, first of all, very sage advice. Agree with everything LJ has said, of course. I do miss my group, absolutely. I think there is an element of GP training where it attracts a lot of different people from all sorts of walks of life and in all sorts of different circumstances, be that have they done other things before they enter GP training, whether they're less than full-time because they have a special interest in something or because of family circumstances, or whether they're an academic GP, which Johannes will touch on that in a sec. But I think what there is there's certainly a sense of community, and there's this element of, you know, find your tribe in a sense of like-minded individuals that want to engage in things that mean something to them. And that weekly VTS was such a pinnacle social point, not only just from a training perspective. You're right. You said, you know, where you are in training as an AIT, there's an obligation for you to cover all these things that you do need to know, and heaven knows that process of learning never stops, of course. But just feeling that you're in a space of community with other people who also care about primary care is a really lovely and cherished thing. I mean, from personal experience, pre-GP, I was a core medical trainee, and that sense of community certainly wasn't there, at least for me. And so coming into a VTS where Johannes and I were in the same VTS to see each other every week, you know, pre-pandemic in person and during the pandemic on Zoom, was just a really nice moment to sit and reflect on how far we'd come as trainees, but also to talk to each other about some of the struggles we may be having, whether that's in practice or, you know, ethical dilemmas or other things that might be going on. But being aware that, you know, very GP speak here, you know, that holistic whole role of being a GP trainee and what that means. I don't know, what about you, Johannes? Are you missing the VTS life?
Yeah, I am a little bit. And I went to the kind of, we had like a final day where we went out for a picnic together, and it was really nice to see everyone. But I mean, because I did academic GP training, the group of people that were there were completely different from the group of people that I trained with. And the pandemic kind of made that more extreme. And what it made me realize is that as doctors, we become really, really good at kind of integrating socially with a group of people. And then 3 to 6 months later, you get chucked in with a new group of strangers and you form kind of bonds with them. So I think there is always this aspect to training where you form sometimes quite kind of tenuous bonds with people. But I think with GP, because we did have that VTS, and there was like a hardcore of people that I think, even though we all finished at different times, you know, there were people who were two or three years ahead of me in GP training, who I'm still really close to. And I think it's, I think, you know, in the way that you, me and Kim still kind of keep in touch, and we've had pancakes since you guys CCT'd. So I think that, you know, you do build up some really close connections. But equally, like with any kind of training, you will also kind of pass a lot of people by, and it's a nice opportunity just to pick and choose, because you've got such a huge group of friends to choose from. Just going back to what LJ was saying, again, completely agree with your wisdom, LJ. I was just going to say, one of the first things to make sure is just make sure in the WhatsApp group, because I feel like, you know, there's a hidden curriculum to GP training. There's the kind of, there's what you get at VTS, and there's what you get when you're at work, but also there's a lot of kind of hidden knowledge, which is just wisdom passed down from ST3 to ST1. And it's really important to be part of that. So make sure that you're kind of hooked into all of the social networks where your VTS is communing. And also I just want to acknowledge the fact that there will be a good chunk of people who do GP training for whom it was maybe not a definite choice. And I think, you know, for a lot of people, you land in your GP practice and really relieved and excited, and it just feels like it's right. But I know there are quite a few GP trainees who always wonder if they could have been a surgeon, or if they could have been, you know, the med reg and then some kind of exciting specialty consultant afterwards. And I think it's okay to be uncertain about that. And I think, you know, it's worth talking about, worth reflecting on with the other people at VTS, because as you were saying, Mira, and with quite a few people on our VTS, there are people who left GP training to go back into medicine or surgery, and there were lots of surgical and medical regs who came back into GP. So I think don't feel that it's strange to be in that position. Be open about it. Have those conversations with your peers. But I think overall, GP is a really, really supportive environment. And just wrap it up.
Just to go off that, actually, I found that GP of all of them tend to be very open with the fact that careers are varied, and that you can drop down to less than full time for a myriad of reasons fairly, I'm not going to say easily, that's the wrong word, but fairly safely. Like, you're taken very seriously if you want to or need to. In ways that perhaps other specialty programs aren't so flexible. I think that supervisors and trainers don't just do general practice clinically all the time. As I said that as if it was something that was lesser, it's not. It's absolutely massive an achievement. If you can do 10 sessions, if you can do all week, every week, just general practice, you're absolutely killing it. So well done, Johannes, in advance. But I think that careers can be so varied, lots of portfolio careers within general practice. People do lots of different things. People don't even do clinical things on the side. And I think that talking about what it is that interests you outside general practice, being a doctor within general practice, actually is fairly normal. and people want to talk to you about it. And I don't think I've ever come across other trainees from other specialty programs talking about how their trainers or their program directors were talking about portfolio careers in the same way, or supporting career divergence in the way that general practice does. So I think that if you have got an interest in something a bit, perhaps a bit deeper than general practice, you would expect to allow, actually probably you could still do it, whether you as a trainee or as a fully CCT GP at the end. There are absolutely opportunities to do whatever it is that you want.
Jumping in here, I think what you've both said is just so on the nose about this. And I think it's that you only know the opportunities out there once you start looking. And sometimes they can fortuitously fall into your lap because you're in the right time at the right place. But it is absolutely using this community, this network of GPs and AITs and allied health professionals around us, that you start to find out things that you may not have even known was something that you were interested in the first place. And I think a reflection for me is, as an AIT, I certainly felt the pressure early on to try and get involved in everything possible, because I thought, I don't want to miss out on any single opportunity. But what that did quite quickly was become quite overwhelming. And it is a 3-year training program. It's one of the shortest training programs that are out there. And so for any AIT who's listening, I think it's really important to remember, it's not a race to the finish line. You have an entire career once you finish to develop interests and change interests, and maybe you look back and you're a completely different clinician, or you know, your spectrum of interest is far ranging than you ever had imagined it to be. That being said, if as an ST1 you're listening to this and you go, but I really love teaching and that's what I really want to get involved with, absolutely get involved with those things at the VTS that you're in, likely allied next to a medical school. Speak to your training program directors, speak to your supervisors. They've obviously had to go through the training to be supervisors in the first place. So there's lots of opportunities there. And even, you know, if you're on a hospital ward, lots of consultants like the GP trainees to do some of the teaching, because it's probably a lot more relevant to the medical students at that time, as opposed to ST9 teaching you know, neurosurgery or something. But I think the other thing I would say in these sorts of first few weeks as you're settling in, absolutely what Johanna said, is getting involved in that WhatsApp group, that kind of sense of community and finding your feet. And also, I think it's really, really important just to get some practical, boring things done and out of the way so that you're not really stressed later down the line. So make sure you've got your login for your portfolios and you've logged in just once. So that when it comes to that halfway point, you're not starting from scratch and that all feels a bit scary. Try and speak to your TPDs to see, are they doing a talk through about what's expected of you in your curriculum? Because these are all tick box exercises that you've all done for your foundation training. But there's obviously an added element in GP land, which is about reflecting on these experiences and kind of talking about them at a level. And does that feed into your actual practice later on? I feel like a bit of a hypocrite saying all of this stuff about being portfolio aware and ready, because hold my hands up, last minute girly over here all the time, probably always will be. But I do think there were some elements where people had advised me to look into things a little bit ahead of time that I did do. And that did save from that last minute stress. I mean, it's obviously very boring talking about this practical stuff, but Johannes, what thoughts on that? Do you think that that's sage advice, or do you think it's just, oh, Mira's long in the tooth now, so she's giving advice that she didn't preach herself?
Mira, I think if you think that you're disorganized, the rest of us are doomed to fail life in general. I think I'm the opposite in that I think I'm really organized, but I'm probably actually the one who is last minute. I just put a reminder on my phone every Tuesday to like flash, to like do one reflection, which sounds really geeky, but it was really good because actually reflections are really easy to bosh out if you just do them occasionally. So yeah, it's a really boring thing to say, but if you could do a little bit at a time, you get really comfortable with the portfolio. You know what to expect. Also, your supervisor won't be overwhelmed, because I think it's quite easy for us to say, I'm going to stay up all night and smash out every single reflection that I need to do. But then your supervisor also has a life, and you know, you can't expect them to then spend 12 hours of their life just reading through inspiring writing that you've come up with at 2 o'clock in the morning with a few too many coffees. But yeah, I agree with everything you've said. The other thing I would say is that one thing that I think was really useful at VTS is although it is a vocational training scheme and your kind of half day release is there as a part of that, it's very much to do with the supportive side of things, the pastoral side of things. And I think that's really important just to reflect the fact that actually a lot of the learning just comes from talking to your peers about clinical stuff and non-clinical stuff. I remember in one of our residentials, our first residentials, Mira, we had to role play I had to role play being spaghetti being boiled in a pot, which is the kind of thing that I find very uncomfortable because I want to learn the facts of how to be a good GP. But actually learning to be spaghetti and wiggle amongst the boiling water bubbles of my new colleagues was also just quite good in helping me understand what GP was and the kind of environment we'd be in, and that actually, you know, learning takes a lot of forms, and just chilling out and enjoying it a little bit is important as well. I think because the training program is 3 years, if you go straight through, a lot of people do feel, especially in the final year with all of the exams and paperwork, that it can just accelerate and accelerate and accelerate. And although generally it is a lovely and gentle and supportive training program, the last stretch can suddenly be quite intense. And I think, you know, thinking about those things and being a little bit prepared in advance is really useful. But equally, like, as I think you probably experienced, Mira, a lot of people will stay in their training practice a little bit after they have CCT'd, and then they'll kind of have a bit more time and space to look around them and then work out and refine their careers. But talk to your ST3s about, you know, what they've learned, and you can't rely on the three of us that have had all of the array of experiences. So talk to the people who are CCTing soon and try and understand, you know, what they find useful with the portfolio or with other opportunities in the area. But yeah, get involved, be spaghetti, have a great time.
Be spaghetti, have a great time, I feel is the motto for our series here. And yeah, Hannes, I'll never forget you being that spaghetti in that residential all those years ago. No, but it's very, very true. I think anyone who's starting a new job as an ST1, you're trying to work out what your rota is, doing nights, trying to figure out a hospital if you've moved somewhere new, you know, or you've got family commitments. There's a whole host of other things going on. And I think one of the things that most GP training or training centres are good at is recognising that you are humans with lives, and recognising that absolutely, you do need to learn the bread and butter of GP, but that will come. And a lot of it is around those so-called, I'm doing it in sort of air quotes here, softer skills that will make you genuinely an asset to primary care. It is really important to know how you can manage chronic diseases or acute emergencies, or, you know, the obs and gynae or the pediatrics of it all. But it's also trying to round out your whole self in terms of being the clinician that you want to be. And I think that that's something that isn't really advertised very much about other training courses. So as a med reg that has now come into GP, it's a very different lifestyle. And I think it's really important to touch here on, you know, touching base with your supervisor is really, really important, because you and your supervisor will be creating a bond that will be lasting for those 3 years. And now some people will be super, super lucky. And there are a few people that unfortunately will get into situations with supervisors that they may not have anticipated that was what their working relationship was going to be. And we have to be frank about that. Not everybody is going to have the supervisor, the dream supervisor. But equally, there's a lot to be learned from all of these experiences. And it's to know and be aware of the support mechanisms that lie within your individual training schemes, be that escalating to your peers, because you never know, has the ST2 or ST3 had a similar trainee to you? Is there a problem there? Talk to each other, and then escalating it to your training program directors and then the head of school. I think a lot of people feel quite isolated when they're going through difficult times, especially as a trainee, you don't want to rock the boat. But I guess my advice is rock the boat, because this is your 3 years and you want to be in charge of that own your own destiny, as it were. But I'll stop waxing lyrical about, you know, escalating for help, but that's really important to me. LJ, there was something you wanted to say, I think.
Oh, absolutely. I agree with rocking the boat. I love rocking the boat. I'm pretty sure my program directors, I'm not going to say dislike me. That's not true. They love me. But I think they know that if something's amiss, that someone's going to say something, it'll be me. And I don't think they mind, really. I think that they want to know. Your programme directors want to do a great job. They're GPs, they're educators, they want to, you know, make sure that you're doing the thing that they want you to do, which is to learn how to be a GP and to enjoy yourself doing it. So if something's not quite right, whether it's with a supervisor or with a hospital placement, like, hands up to Oxford, they do a really good job at responding to if your job's not very good, they'll sort of inquire about it and make sure GP trainees don't go there in the future. And I think, you know, with the move towards 24 months in general practice, which I'm fortunate to be a part of, and 12 months in hospital placements, you know, they're listening and they take it really seriously. So I think that, you know, if you need to raise a concern, raise it, because, you know, it's good practice for in the future. If you need to raise a concern, if you're worried about something, if it's something affects you and your well-being, if something affects other people, you know, you need to get involved in using your voice. You know, you're going to be a fully CCT doctor before most of your colleagues from medical school are, because of how short the training program is. And I think that as a GP, one day you're going to be a leader. You have to be. And actually, like, taking the opportunity to use your voice for the betterment of your training program or your colleagues, or, you know, in fact your patients in the future, is good practice. So why not go for it?
Yeah, I think some of the common pitfalls that people come across are around your appointment times being kind of squeezed down too quickly, or working in a clinic where maybe the start time is really early or really late and it doesn't fit around your childcare or other things. And there will be some new trainers who are also new to the role and not used to what's going on. So like you say, if any of those things don't feel quite right, speak to your friends and colleagues and work out, you know, is it within the normal range? And if it isn't, or even if it just doesn't fit with what you want to be doing, then have that conversation, because people generally are open to having a chat. And even if you meet a little bit of resistance with the first person, just find a way, and generally people are quite receptive to it.
Yeah, absolutely. All very wise words indeed. And going on to talk, speaking of hospital jobs, I think it has to be said that a lot of hospital jobs GPs find invaluable from a training perspective, especially things like A&E, parts of obs and gynae, parts of paediatrics. But there will be the quite a few hospital jobs that I think GP trainees feel that A, they've been stuck in or dumped in, or that they're actually not very valued, or they're not appreciated in that role and actually maybe shafted on a rota. These are all really important things to recognize within the sort of the training system. And being on the other side of it, I feel that I'm empowered to tell you this, is that, again, rock the boat. If you're finding that there are consistent issues with your sort of peers saying that this job is really rubbish, oh God, you got this rota, blah, 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 blah. Feed this back to your reps. In every training scheme, there will be GP representatives who are expected to feed back any concerns to the training program directors, but also within the each hospital that you have, the School of Medicine, they will also want to know about this feedback that's happening through the medical education kind of scheme of things. And as LJ has said, hospitals before all across the UK have had GP trainees taken off them because they are not providing enough of a service for that is thought to be good enough for your training. So really think about that. If that is something that is particularly bothering you and your peers, certainly raise that. What I would say on the other hand is, I think that there are opportunities in lots of spaces where you may not recognize them to be. And if you don't ask, because you are a GP trainee and you don't want to butt in the way of specialist trainees, that you will miss out on opportunities. So for instance, if you're in a pediatrics job, depending on how your rota may be, it's sensible to sit in an allergy clinic. It's sensible to try and sit in, you know, certain clinics that will be much more suited to you and your needs when you finally CCT and you're speaking to thousands of worried parents about their children's allergies, things like that. So there, and these are all things that you can tailor your PDP towards. So it's something I hugely recommend you speaking to your supervisors about and trying to tailor your hospital jobs to how they suit you. There will always be an element of service provision when we work for the NHS. And I think that that's an element that, as doctors, all three of us are nodding our heads furiously here, that we accept that that's par for the course. But that isn't to say that you know, you're consigning yourself to 4 months or 6 months of hell. There should be some elements within that job that make it worthwhile for your training in the long haul. Do you think that's fair, LJ?
Absolutely. So I rejoice at no longer having to work in a hospital, but that's not to say that all of my hospital jobs have been abysmal. I think that you get out what you put in with most things in life. And I think that you get out what you put in with a hospital job. Just because you're not training to be a psychiatrist or a paediatrician, or in my case, at one point, a transplant surgeon. We'll leave that in the air and figure out how that was useful for GP training. But there's so much to learn. Like I now know how, you know, immunosuppression works in a transplant patient, and in the transplant renal, super tertiary renal medicine unit I was in, there was a dialysis unit, and the dialysis patients liked to ask the doctor covering the unit about their minor ailments, which is a very GP thing to be doing. Like someone had couldn't hear, they had wax in their ear, needed someone to have a look, completely unrelated to their renal thing that they had going for their dialysis for 4 hours. But I had a good look in the ear, got to practice my skills that way, and, you know, practiced that sort of thing. So even in the most bizarre situations, you can learn something towards your GP training. And as well, I had the experience of moving to general practice training in a brand new area. I'd never worked in that county before or in the city before. And I arrived. And I think that starting on a hospital job, you don't get the same community orientation as you might get as a GP trainee in GP, but you get a really good idea of the specialist service and how it works. So I started in rheumatology. So then I learned that in where I was working, there was a rheumatology helpline. This is how the clinics worked. This is how you referred in. Like, you got to see the other side and how it works really well. And I think that things like psychiatry and pediatrics and obs and gynae are all really valuable for that. You can sort of see the other side and see how it works. If you're in medicine and you're working an acute medical rota, doing on calls and things, you know how A&E works, you know how medical take works and things like that. So you can, when you're in GP, you can apply that. So it is helpful for like the community orientation, understanding what services are available. So yeah, you get out what you put in. If you keep your eye out for things, that they'll be there. Patients, you learn from all the patients all the time, all of them, in every interaction.
Yeah, I think the other thing is, you know, even within one community, even if you're working in one area, every GP practice will run things differently because they're all so unique. So if you find that the first GP practice that you're working in, you know, doesn't do things a way that you love, it doesn't mean that, you know, when you do your next placement, you won't find your happy place. Or maybe even if you go through the whole of GP training and it doesn't quite click, it doesn't mean that there aren't other GP practices in the same area or in a different area that will just really vibe with you. So if you're feeling that things aren't clicking, then just have a look around and see what the options might be after CCT. Because, you know, some GP practices are like ancient converted houses with this clinic room scattered across 7 floors in, you know, one part of a neighborhood. And then just around the corner, you might have a brand new polyclinic that has all of these incredible services where you can just, you know, send someone next door for an ultrasound. So, yeah, if you do have a difficult time when you start, or if things don't fit perfectly, just keep an open mind and look around you.
I think that also applies, that same logic, in all GP surgeries are different to individual GPs. So as a GP trainee in GP, you'll be supervised by different GPs. You won't just have your name supervisor who will sort of be keeping an eye on you and debriefing you. That might be different GPs every morning and afternoon sometimes. And all GPs practice differently. They have different thresholds for uncertainty. They've got different thresholds for if you're working remotely, as in like phone calling patients or video calling patients, different thresholds for bringing them in for a face-to-face. I think that, you know, it's important to bear in mind that all the GPs that will be supervising you are different. And it's really important that in your early bit of your rotation, when you're sitting and watching different GPs consult, to like pick up different things, different ways of practicing, and you'll develop your own way of practicing over the 3 years. And I still do it. I find it really interesting how my practice will change depending on who's supervising me that day. Knowing that Dr. X is supervising me and they're a bit more risk averse, I'll kind of make sure that I do maybe overdo things a little bit. And then on the other, in the afternoon, Dr. Y will be a bit less risk averse, but would want me to see them face to face and examine them fully. You know, you sort of change how you work a little bit, but then you, as part of that, you discover who you are as a doctor. And to circle back actually to what Mira was saying earlier, you find yourself as the doctor in general practice a lot more, that you're not kind of conforming to a standard guideline of what's expected quite so much. I don't think you kind of get to develop yourself as an individual practitioner. It's you, it's the patient in a room, hashing it out, taking your history, doing your exam, doing your management plan, and having that relationship, which hopefully as a GP you'll have with them over a time period, right, as a GP. So yeah, finding yourself in this, in these 3+ years, however long it takes you to do your GP training, lean into it, enjoy it. It might be a bit different and you might not click with everybody, but it's worth having the experience.
Yeah, I think one of the really nice things about GP training is that you always kind of have the comfort blanket of the clinical knowledge summaries. So there is always something you can fall back on if you need it, but you do feel like you have that wiggle room because you can make a suggestion, you can get the patient to come back in a week or two and see how things are going. And you don't have to get things right the first time. You don't have to fix everyone's problems and all of their problems in one go. You've got time to bring them back and forth. And I think one of the most valuable things that I learned, and it took me towards the end of my training, I think when I was preparing for the RCA, it was something that I came across in one of the many training videos. But essentially, when you're in hospital, the majority of your patients are unwell, and they're in hospital because they're unwell. When you're in general practice, the majority of your patients come to you because they're worried, and they may be unwell. But for a lot of the patients, it's actually about learning to sit with the uncertainty and helping the patient manage the uncertainty and self-care. And I think it's becoming increasingly important to help our patients cope, because there's so much to make us anxious these days. But for a lot of people, they just need to share that burden with us. And actually, we don't need to go looking for things to solve. We don't need to find problems in their life that we can try and fix, which I think is what hospital medicine teaches us to do. And actually, just listening to patients and being comfortable that actually you might have a consultation where a patient came in thinking they had a problem and they've talked it through with you. And actually, that's it. And that's fine. And you've probably done a really good job.
Yeah, 100%. I think this summed up perfectly kind of what our views on GP are. And actually, although I'm sure we are actually all three very different clinicians, that are, this is our thoughts on this all very much align. And I think that it has to be said, being a GP really does celebrate individuality and respects that people come from all walks of life, and therefore maybe has a different way in which to manage, as LJ said, uncertainty and risk. And as Johanna said, you know, focusing on what really matters and getting to the crux of that in that 10-minute appointment or whatever it may be. And that's, I suppose, where your AIT journey is beginning, is trying to hone those skills so that there is a culmination of all of these things. And right now you're worried maybe, well, but how do I manage diabetes in this person? And that's absolutely fine. Having all those questions and wanting to get the medicine right is very, very reasonable. And that is why we have those examinations. And this is why standards need to be met to provide safe patient care. But in terms of optimizing your AIT journey, it's really about thinking of all the other wider things that are associated with that. And I suppose that leads me really nicely onto, we've sort of spoken about hospital jobs, GP jobs, touched a little bit on the portfolio. And I guess it's, if you're listening to this and you're an AIT who's interested and keen on wanting to get involved in other things that might be going on in your communities that are local to you, or wanting to get involved with the, you know, GP land a little bit more nationally or even internationally, it's about knowing where to go for those sorts of things as well. And I suppose as the podcast that is aligned with the RCGP, it would be remiss of me not to mention that obviously the Royal College has a lot of events that are specifically garnered towards AIT. A huge portion of a lot of the work and the output they do are all around kind of celebrating AITs and providing events and things for them. There is a national AIT committee, so I would really recommend those of you who are listening and who are keen to get involved and find out how the best way of getting involved. There are more sort of local roles like reps representing your kind of immediate vocational training scheme groups or people that sit on a slightly higher level from kind of boards and things like that. So that's certainly one way people can get involved. Another way through the college is thinking about conference. So that's something exciting that happens every year. And this year it's in Glasgow. So some of the AITs may already be coming to that, whether it's presenting work or posters, or actually just, you know, meeting some other GPs and chatting to people who are of a right kind of similar mindset or finding out about different things. When I went to conference last year, there was a whole stand talking about kind of Island and Highland Scottish GPs, and people wanted to do rural practice. And one of my friends bounded up to them and thought, oh my gosh, I really want to know more about this. And that started sort of a route where she's actually going to go off and do some work with them. So you never know who you'll meet at certain events like this. If you're active on social media, a few of us are on various degrees, you know, there's lots of opportunities that you may find through Twitter, LinkedIn, and other things like that. So, you know, use those things to your advantage. And on a sort of more local level, there are things called the faculties. So every kind of location will have an RCGP aligned faculty, and they do love having trainees there because they represent a majority kind of stakeholder in those areas. Trainees make up a lot of general practice across the country, and it is valid to have your thoughts heard on papers and other things that the RCGP Council might be wanting to discuss that are sort of the flavour for GPs at the time, but also to consider kind of the political sphere of what might be happening as well. So that's something worth considering. I'm sure that there are a thousand other things that there are also available that people can kind of get involved with. The LMC, which is the local medical council, which is where lots of GPs sit, and lots of those kind of have spaces for AITs to come and sit as lay members to kind of sit and experience what it might be like doing a kind of different role within the sphere of GP. So there's lots of these, and not to, you know, wax lyrical and podcast even more, but that is the flavor of this podcast series. If you look back through our catalog, you will see we have done lots of episodes talking to all sorts of different kinds of GPs that have an interest in a variety of different things, whether it's academic medicine, getting involved in developing the COVID vaccines, people interested in medical education, a doctor that is involved in homeless, GP that's involved in homeless medicine. You know, the list is endless. So definitely go and check that out, because essentially you've chosen a career that could really lead you anywhere. Now, I'm really aware that we have spoken a lot about the great things and some of the maybe not so great things of GP training. And we do still want you to keep listening. So I guess let's do some quick roundoffs. Johannes, any other top tips or pearls and pitfalls of GP training that you want to leave the AITs with?
I think you've had all of my pearls, Mira, but I mean, just see what it feels like and give it time, settle in, there's no rush. Just get to know people. Conferences are really good, and find out what other things are available as well. It doesn't need to be purely GP. So some of the best conferences I've been to for networking and just personal interest, kind of digital health conferences, I made some really good friends and contacts through those. So just kind of keep your eyes and ears open, but don't worry about it. Have a nice time. Be spaghetti, rock the boat, have a great time.
Fantastic. And LJ, how about you?
I hate to come after beat spaghetti, rock the boat, have a good time. That's awful. I guess my advice is this is just a really good opportunity to be the doctor that you want to be. I think there's, without sort of settling on it too much, there's a lot of misery in the profession at the moment. And I think that actually you're in a really good position to not be miserable. So be the doctor you want to be. And I love every day I go to work, and I don't just do GP. I do all the other bits as well. And it all comes together in a really positive way for me. And I really, really hope and believe that it will be the same for the listener. So enjoy it.
Well, thank you both very much for sitting here and talking about AIT. I suppose all that's left for me to say is Welcome again to you all who may be listening to this podcast. I hope you've sort of enjoyed listening to our top tips and tricks. And if there's anything else that you'd want to hear about in the podcast, then producer Bryn will leave our handy email in the description below so you can get back to us about any episodes that you might want to hear in the future. This is also a plea that we are actually looking for new hosts of the podcast as well. As we all go through our training and CCT life, we realize that the podcast has become bigger than just us. And really, we want to reflect appropriately the diverse nature of GPs and trainees who are out there. So if you're listening to this and you think, oh, I'd like to give this a go, or you can think of someone that you think, oh, they would sound great talking about X or Y, then please do get in touch. We will be at the conference trying to garner new interest. But in the meantime, it's just me, Johannes, and LJ, and of course, producer Bryn, wishing you all the best. This is the RTGP Somewhere in Between podcast. Bye.
Bye.
See ya.
Yay.